Here's to the crazy ones, the misfits, the rebels, the troublemakers, the round pegs in the square holes, the ones who see things differently. They're not fond of rules, and they have no respect for the status quo. You can quote them, disagree with them, glorify or vilify them. About the only thing you can't do is ignore them, because they change things. They push the human race forward. While some may see them as the crazy ones, we see genius. Because the people who are crazy enough to think they can change the world are the ones who do.
Welcome to Curmudgeon's Corner for the week of October 2nd to October 8th, 2011. And, well, yeah, once again, I'm recording at the end of that time period. It is October 8th as I record this. Normally, we would have recorded on the 2nd. Yvonne was not available, and then, of course, I was still busy finishing up the last little bits of my move. Not counting unpacking. We still have lots and lots of unpacking to do. And so time got by, I got busy, and here we are on Saturday, October 8th, recording. Now, that did allow a few events to happen over the course of the week that I can talk about a little bit. Of course, Yvonne will want to talk about them again tomorrow when we record another show on October 9th. But first and foremost, as that little intro should make obvious, Steve Jobs obviously passed away this week, and you can't have missed it. It's everywhere. The tributes and the remembrances and the this and the that and the going over his legacy and everything that is here, essentially because of the vision of this man. This obviously was not unexpected. He's been in bad health for a long, long time and has been, you could visibly tell he was getting worse. You always hope for the best in these situations, but, even though he had the quote-unquote better form of pancreatic cancer, no form is a good form. It meant he had a few years instead of a few months. I guess he lived 8 years after his initial diagnosis or something along those lines. And he did a lot during those 8 years. And I fully admit, look, put me in that position. I'm already a billionaire. I've already made lots of good money. I've had some successes. I get a diagnosis that says I've only got a few years left. I don't know that I would spend as much time as he did on his company and making cool new products. Maybe, I don't know, if I had that opportunity, maybe I would, but I gotta think that I would retreat and I'd do the... long walks on the beach and spending time with my family and, reading the things I never got along to reading and, mainly the family, enjoying as much time as I possibly could with the family and, doing a few things off the old bucket list, as they say. But, here's the thing. Steve Jobs's bucket list was to change the world. And, so that's what he did. You've heard everywhere else the long litany of the things that were basically, all of these things, of course, if you look at the original Mac, the iMac, the the iPod, the iPad, the iPhone. All of these things, of course, had huge teams of people working on them at Apple. It wasn't just Steve Jobs by any means whatsoever. But the man was the one with the singular vision that pushed these things forward and had, you know, this is what I want to create. And it's going to be pure and it's going to be good. And we have to make compromises as you do with anything, but we're going to make the right compromises. And we're going to make it in this way, and it's going to conform to my vision, and God damn it, that's the way it's going to be. And in more cases than not, he got it right. I mean, any one of these choices and compromises, you can argue the other side. People think, at the time when the iPhone came out, what do you mean it has no buttons? It has no keyboard? Are you insane? Well, guess what? Yes, there are certain applications that need the keyboard, and you can still get phones with keyboards, and there will always be people who need that. But for what it is, for most of the, huge numbers of people who've gone out and bought iPhones and iPads, you don't really miss it for what you use it for. And that was seen as utterly insane. Like, what do you mean no keyboard? But, that was the vision. I don't know how much else there is to say, really. I mean, an amazing amount of output, an amazing amount of work that was done, an amazing amount of things that really did change the world. I mean, you look at each of these in turn. The original Macintosh, the mouse and the graphical user interface, and yes, I know that came from Xerox PARC, but this was the first consumer device to actually use and commercialize that stuff. And did they become the leader of the pack? No, but the things that are in Windows came directly from that. It's not a secret that was basically a copy. Windows 95, was a copy of the Macintosh stuff, and, completely and totally changed the way that people interacted with computers. Then, the iPod completely overturned an industry. It was not the first MP3 player. It was not the first, hard drive-based MP3 player at the time. But it was the first one to, quote unquote, get it right, get it done in a way that put all the pieces together to make it easy to use and make it to appeal outside of a very niche audience. And, between that and the iTunes store and everything else, completely upset an industry. It turned it on its head. The music industry is not what it was before. And they're still reeling from it and still trying to figure out how to adapt. And, who knows where that'll go. But, major effects there. The iPhone completely changed what the standard was for a phone, specifically for a smartphone. But, the iPad is defining a whole new thing as well. And all of these things, are things where people had been saying for a long time, hey, an internet phone, cool idea, let's try to do it. Or, hey, a tablet, cool idea, let's try to do it. An MP3 player, electronic music player. Nobody else did it before Steve Jobs came in and pushed his vision of it. All of those other attempts were not going anywhere. They weren't getting traction. They weren't moving forward. Because it took that meld that he brought to things of not just the tech geek, but also, the artist and the human and the bringing the whole package together in a way that makes sense, not just for techies, but for regular regular people. And, you know, and through all of this, of course, you know, by all reports, the man was a royal ass. You know, he was not a fun person to work with. You know, he would rip people to shreds. He would destroy egos. He would, you know, all of this kind of, he was a dick, you know. And, you know, and I've heard, you know, sometimes it's said you have to be a bit of a dick to get ahead. And, you know, in the end, yeah, you are still just an asshole. But sometimes you're an asshole that has produced magnificent things. And, you know, and sometimes that's what it takes to make it happen. Because you have to, you know, impose your will and make it happen exactly the way you want it. That's not the only way to get things done, but it's one way, and it certainly worked for Steve Jobs and for Apple. And you can't quarrel with the results. You know, it may be you could say, well, you know, couldn't he have been a little nicer and still got there? I don't know, maybe, maybe not. But in the end, he produced a string of absolutely amazing things. And, you know, in my list there, I even left out, you know, things he did elsewhere. I mean, Next, which eventually became the core of the current Macintosh operating system, but which also was had a lot going in and of itself. It never became a commercial success, but, you know, I've heard mentioned over the last few days that, you know, Next boxes were the boxes that were used to initially develop the World Wide Web over in CERN with Tim Berners-Lee, etc. The first browsers were on Next. Pixar, completely different area, huge stuff done there, and some great movies. Love those Pixar movies. Although Cars 2, eh, not so much, but, you know, whatever, they gotta have it done sometime. But anyway, you've heard tons of this over the last few days. Yvonne and I will probably talk about it again on the next show, since he isn't having a chance to weigh in this time. And I'll tell you, this is another one of those things I've mentioned a couple times before. There are very few people I didn't have a personal relationship with that still, or I really felt it when I heard they died. Jim Henson is one. Johnny Carson, I think I felt that way about, although I remember that a little bit less. Months ago now, I guess, Elizabeth Sladen, who played Sarah Jane Smith on Doctor Who, in my sort of childhood, first fictional character I ever had a crush on. But now Steve Jobs. I definitely, you know, I was at work sort of wrapping up the day when the alerts started coming in off my iPhone, of course, you know, and I started getting alerts from all the different apps that, you know, I have that give news alerts. And boom, 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 they started coming in. And of course, I immediately had to go start looking for more information. But it did feel like a kick in the stomach. It did feel like it was somebody I knew. Even though, of course, I don't. I never knew the man, never met the man, never had any sort of interaction. But, you know, it still felt that way. It's like a critical, you know, important part of, you know, the modern world is gone. We'll see. I mean, Apple will do fine for the foreseeable future, at least for the next few years. Honestly, who knows after that? When you have companies that are so singularly focused by their founders, sometimes it does, you lose some of that after they're gone. You know, certainly, like, you know, I've mentioned before, I think Wendy's. And Wendy's was never the same after Dave Thomas died. But, you know, there's a good crew over at Apple. They've spent a lot of time learning to think like Steve. You know, they had classes, on learning it to think like Steve, from what I've heard. So I think they'll do fine. There's a lot more insanely great stuff to come, I'm sure. But it will be different. And Steve's presence will be missed. Anyway, enough on Steve Jobs. We'll be back talk about a few other things. Time for a break. Enjoy your exciting break.
AfricaFocus.org features high-quality analysis and progressive advocacy on African issues with a particular attention to priority issues affecting the entire continent. The heart of the website is the Africa Focus Bulletin. Other features include regularly updated Africa-related news feeds and a set of country pages with extensive background and links on each African country. If you follow African issues or are even curious, visit AfricaFocus.org today.
Okay, and I'm back. Like I said, I'm sure we'll talk more about Steve Jobs with Yvonne on next week's show, which I'll be recording less than 24 hours after I'm recording this one, because I suck. Anyway, another thing that happened. Sarah Palin dropped out, said she would not be running for president this time around. And as I think our regular listeners know, this means I was right. Yay! I've been saying from the very beginning that Sarah Palin would spend a lot of time acting like she might be a candidate and then in the end not run. The question was just how long that she would let the ruse go on. I did allow for the possibility that she might actually, try to do something in Iowa or New Hampshire. But most likely she would not, and she'd be out before then. And hey, that's exactly what happened. She spent, most of this year playing this little game. Is she going to run? Is she not going to run? Hey, I'm going to have a bus tour. Hey, I'm going to have these speeches in Iowa and New Hampshire. Hey. Many months ago, her daughter Bristol in an interview said that the decision was already made. And maybe she was wrong. Who knows? But, I think she knew all along she wasn't actually going to run for president. I don't think she was really agonizing over the decision and deciding whether to or not or whatever. Now, maybe she was just waiting to see if, by the time we got to this time of the year, it looked like there was a reasonable opening and her polls were decent or whatever. I don't know, maybe. But clearly, her negatives have increased. Her position in the polls has been low. There are other people in the race who occupy sort of similar spaces as she does. I think if she had gotten in, there'd be a little bit of a splash. She'd have a little bit of a spike. And then she'd drop down again, just like everybody else. I think that if she had seriously gotten in as a candidate in her own right, then the going over her background with a fine-tooth comb that did not happen in 2008 and for the most part has not happened, at least in the mainstream in between, would have happened. We have that book that came out recently, Rogue. I have not read it. A lot of interesting things in there, apparently, just in terms of her character, how she related with people, things like that. Yeah, there was the affair with the basketball player. Yeah, but there's more than that. And it just, I mean, things I think we knew anyway, about just how petty, vindictive, and small this woman really is. This is her, and I said this in 2008. I preferred Obama all along to McCain, but like, there is a version of McCain out there that I would have very seriously considered. You know, the version who was thinking about Joe Lieberman as a vice presidential candidate, the version who really was moderate leaning and who thought that, you know, talked a lot about George Bush's excesses as president in terms of torture and other things. That candidate had mostly disappeared by the time we got to the convention because he had to pander to the right wing to get the nomination. But once he nominated Sarah Palin, to me that was an absolute non-starter. It showed, on McCain's part, seemed to show such a complete lack of irresponsibility, or lack of responsibility, in order to nominate somebody like that. But more to the point, the idea of having her a heartbeat away from the presidency, as they say, it's just terrifying. Terrifying. And it wasn't clear at first, like when she first gave her convention speech, hey, looked pretty good. But then as soon as she started opening her mouth and talking, oh my God, really? But yeah, if she'd really run, even for the Republican nomination, let alone if she got the nomination and actually ran for president, you know, we would have heard every little bit. We would have, you know, the whole thing about, you know, maybe Trigg isn't really hers. Maybe Trigg is Bristol's. Which, by the way, in the background over the last couple of years, there's been lots and lots of evidence continuing to build that Sarah Palin was not pregnant in that time frame, and that this might have been, you know, something else. No solid proof, but the circumstantial stuff is much more substantial than it was a few years ago. Let's just put it that way. But... you know, and whatever, and, you know, just covering for her daughter, whatever. Normally it would be none of our business. But when you have somebody, you know, I don't know. It's the kind of deception that is maybe understandable for someone not into public light. It's none of your business, it's our family, are good answers to those kinds of questions. But once you use the family as a prop, use the baby as a prop, repeatedly talk about it, make up stories. Anyway, and then there's all kinds of stuff about what she was doing when she was governor of Alaska and how she was misusing her power there. All kinds of stuff would have come up. We would have gone through this with a fine-tooth comb. We'd learn all about her little affair with the basketball player, you know, many decades ago. And which, by the way, that isn't relevant to her prospects as president, but you know, we'd hear more about her college years and more about what she did there. And for one, I'm very glad that I'm not going to have to be subject to that. But I suspect one of the reasons that she is not going to run is because there would be a lot of dirty laundry aired in that kind of investigation. Just a suspicion on my part. Anyway, hopefully good riddance. I think she's going to try to stay involved and influence things, and who's going to get the Sarah Palin endorsement and blah, 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 blah. Maybe she'll get another reality TV show. I don't know, whatever. But as long as she's, I don't know, I'm glad she's out of the actual Republican race. Of course, at the same time, you look at the people who are still in it, and my God, really, Herman Cain is... like, in some polls, in the lead at this point, and in the general trend, he's running a close second if you include a whole bunch of different polls and average them. Herman Cain, really? Really? I don't know if any of you guys have listened to any of the debates, and I haven't listened to the last couple of debates. I have them on, you know, on TiVo or on a to-do list, or, you know, there's the nice little website with a summary of links to all of them. I should dig that up for you guys. But he's nuts. He has no freaking clue what he's talking about. He's not certifiably insane in the same way as, like, Bachman or Sarah Palin or those guys. And I shouldn't make fun. Certifiably insane implies more than is actually true. But those guys are whack jobs. Herman Cain is a little bit more normal, but he's still... he doesn't really know what's going on. He's out of his league. Anyway. And Perry is not that much better. Look, guys. You know, Romney is the only one in here who's a real candidate. Romney's also the only one who could actually beat Obama. Unless the economy completely self-destructs, much, much worse than it is now. But come on, go ahead and just get it over with. Pick Romney. We know it's going to be Romney. Yes, there are scenarios where it could be somebody else. Yes, I understand that. But it really does look like Romney. Come on. It's not like... I don't know. It seems more clear that it's Romney than at the same time in the previous session that it was clear that it was McCain. And it certainly wasn't clear, you know, Obama, Hillary, whatever, that kind of stuff. Although... You know, that is the counterexample, because a lot of people would have said it's clearly Hillary at this point 4 years ago. Although by this time Obama was coming up in the polls. I don't know. There are things that could happen, but, like, you know, the mainstream sort of Republican establishment kept sort of asking over and over again, you know, surely somebody else is going to jump in. Surely, you know, Christie. Come on, Christie. No, no, no. You know, Palin. How about Palin? No, no. You know, Jeb Bush or whoever. Or, you know, whoever else they can think of. Because there's such dissatisfaction with the existing crop here. Because no one likes Romney. But no one really likes these other guys either. And I shouldn't say no one, of course. But... a relatively small portion of the Republican Party likes any one of these candidates. None of them have the broad mass of support, which is why you see this split field. Romney's leading the polls, but he's only got 20-something percent in those polls. And another interesting poll factoid that I saw mentioned somewhere, I forget where, is that another poll showed that only about 20% of the Republican primary electorate actually have made up their minds and have a preferred candidate at all. So a lot could happen, but it won't be Sarah Palin unless she decides to run as a third party a little bit later. But let's leave that alone. Anyway, let's take another break. It's time for your poem of the week. And when we get back from your poem, we will talk about something else.
This is the Curmudgeon's Corner Poem of the Week, brought to you by Notel Motel.
100 Words to the Oddities of You, by Lorna D. Cervantes. I love all the oddities of you, the oddball you with your odd normality, oddest you as the animal you can kill with all finality. You're the oddest love I've begun to love, oddly fine and refined as a cat, cat licking you, that platinum tongue, that ravishing you, slow in your pixian fun, those fingers, the magic in your hands to soothe, to hold, warm as a cub in Arctic heat. I hold you close, keep you close inside, sheltering this rara avis I seek, this skittish roan, this dappled mare is aware and grown accustomed as yours to own.
For more like this, go to notelmotel.org with a new poet each week and a new poem every weekday.
And we're back. So, next on my list, I have a couple different things. I was going to talk a little bit about Wall Street purposes. The Wall Street protests. The Occupy Wall Street, Occupy Seattle, Occupy DC, whatever they are. Also, I was going to talk a little bit about the killing of Al Awalki? Whatever. But, you know, look. I just want to mention first. God, I'm tired. I'm still so tired. The entire month of September was moving. We ended up having, like, so many loads of trucks. So many. And look, you know, we'd had professionals before. So we've done it both ways over the years. Some of my listeners who knew me way back in college helped me move a few times back then. And I am quite sure several of them swore never to do so again. When we moved down to Florida, I think we did it ourselves, mostly. When I moved from Florida to Seattle, or to the Seattle area, I should say, we had professional movers. We had the whole thing. It was part of a relocation for my company. They covered it. But we had a really bad experience with it. You know, they broke stuff. They packed stuff in ways that didn't make sense. They lovingly and carefully packed the empty shampoo bottle with all kinds of extra padding and protection. But meanwhile, took some artwork that had done by my grandmother and just shoved it into a box with no protection whatsoever. You know, things like that. And basically, it was a mess. And by the way, now that we have finally unloaded our self-storage space that we've had for the last 5 years, we think a few things actually went missing, too. We had a generator back in Florida that we think somehow didn't make it. We had bad experiences last time. So this time, we got our initial estimate, and it was, you know, many thousands of dollars to move all of our stuff. And so we're like, we have other things to spend many thousands of dollars on. Or maybe it would be nice to save that or whatever. In the end, we're spending it, but because I need a new car, and other things. So we decided to do it ourselves again. And yeah, no, it was an absolutely horrid month. Yeah, ended up taking way more time, way more trucks. Like, we had to rent trucks 3 different times. The last time we kept the truck for a whole week. Lots of, you know, physical labor, moving boxes back and forth. And, you know, I fell off the truck at one point, hurt my foot. Not bad enough to go to the emergency room or anything like that, but, you know, a week and a half later or whatnot, my foot still hurts. Not fun. And you know, look, the bottom line, you know, and even the last times I moved, which were, you know, a whole much more crap now than there was then. But even when I was moving, like, in the 90s, people were talking about how much crap I had and what was I doing. Well, this time, I think I finally believe it. Because as I was moving things over and over again, I'm like, I cannot believe that I am moving this right now. This heavy box of whatever the hell crap it is, I cannot believe that I am spending time and effort moving this right now. Now, of course, I still don't feel like I can toss, like, an entire box at a time. I want to look through the boxes and then toss it. Because, like, you know, for instance, I'm looking at a bunch of boxes in my new home office here, and, you know, a bunch of them are just full of paper. Now, I know that if I go through one of those boxes, especially with the mood I'm in now with this kind of stuff, I will throw away 95% of what's in one of those boxes. But 5% I will still keep. And I can't determine what that 5% is without actually going through the damn box. Which, of course, takes time. Which, of course, I don't have. Which, of course, means by the time we're moving again, hopefully quite a few years from now, but we'll still not have gone through most of this crap, maybe. Although my resolution at this point is every weekend to go through a bit, like one or two boxes, and throw some crap away. Of course, at the moment, we have the opposite problem is that, you know, the trash can the municipality gives you isn't big enough. So we fill it up in like 10 seconds. And now if we produce more trash through determining we want to throw stuff away, there's no place to put it. Yeah, so that's kind of fun. Anyway, I'm glad that we are done moving and getting out of the old house and all of that kind of stuff. We've got tons and tons and tons and tons of stuff to unpack. We've got some stuff that's out in our driveway right now that really shouldn't be out in our driveway and needs to be brought in, but there's no space to do it right now until we go through some of the other stuff and unpack it and throw some stuff away. So this weekend, next week, priorities are, you know, get the new place kind of livable again instead of just having an absolute maze of boxes and crap that you have to walk over to get anywhere, and clear enough space to get all the stuff outside, inside, so we don't, you know, look completely trashy, which at the moment we do, but that won't last. We'll get the outside cleaned up. Anyway, fun, moving, fun. I hope to stay here quite a while, even though the commute does suck. The commute, like I tested the going home commute, but I had not tested the going in the morning commute. The going in the morning commute really sucks, especially like if you have to do it right at peak, which I didn't used to, but the last year or so I've had a number of meetings that are like 8-9 a.m. and means I have to go in at peak, and oh god, awful commute. Anyway, it makes me actually consider the possibility of public transit. I normally wouldn't consider that. I'm normally not a fan. But, you know, after a few days of, like, you know, an hour in a car, I'm like, I could do with a bus. Maybe. Or a train. Is there a train? How about a plane? Maybe an ultralight. Maybe that's the way to get to work. Ultralight. Or one of those little personal helicopters? Yeah, probably not. Anyway, let's take a break. I've babbled on about my move. I just wanted to get that off my chest. One more break, and we'll come up. I'll talk about a couple of random things for a few minutes, and then we'll wrap it up. Here we go. Break.
Ready for the test, Dracula?
I'm ready.
Frankenstein, then let us begin.
Creepy Classics celebrates the classic horror and science fiction films from the silent era through the 1960s, and retro TV horror from the 1950s to the 1970s. Visit creepyclassics.com for all your classic video needs. And when you buy something, tell Ron that the curmudgeons say hello.
And here I am, back for one final segment. So, Wall Street and or Al-Awlaki. Let me try to hit both real quick. We may talk about them more in coming weeks as well. The Occupy X protests. My first reaction, as I've been hearing about them, is the same as I have to all protests, which is, I don't like protests. I don't like protesters. The whole way that these things go down can often take me from agreeing with somebody on principle to saying, okay, I agree with you on principle, but what's with this asshole protest? Why are you disrupting traffic? Why are you getting in my way? But, you know, I think about that a little bit more, and I'm like, is that really fair? Because I think about that when people are picketing the White House or picketing Wall Street or doing a march downtown that gets in my way. But I didn't feel the same way about the protesters in Iran a while back, or the protesters in Egypt, or whatever. In those, it's like, yeah, go, go, go. It's, you know, exciting social change, blah, 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 blah. And so, yeah, there's a double standard there. And it's interesting for me to think about a little bit. Like, what is the difference here? Is it the level of injustice? Like, how would I have felt about the civil rights protests in the 1960s? You know, would I have been annoying protesters get off the street? Or would I have joined in? I don't know. Because to me, the whole thing about the protests is like almost orthogonal to the causes involved. Because, you know, I see protesters both for causes I like and causes I don't like. And in both cases, I'm like, protesters. You know? But then again, the foreign examples show that that doesn't always have to be the case. But I don't know what the difference is. I mean, these Occupy Wall Street, I am the 99%, whatever, blah, 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 have not captured my imagination so far. You know, it seems like I understand you're frustrated. I understand that, you know, the financial sector in particular and big business otherwise, you know, have potentially, let's talk specifically the financial sector. You know, a lot of the stuff on Wall Street, a lot of the big banks, etc. Yeah, they were responsible for fucking us over a couple years back. And yes, the government bailed them out. And yes, they've continued acting as if nothing bad ever happened in the first place. And I understand the frustration there. I feel the frustration there. I feel like a lot of these organizations should have failed and should have gone out of business for taking on too much risk and too much bad risk that didn't work out. Well, and you know, that's part of taking a risk, is that you may fail. But with the whole too big to fail thing, and you know, oh, if we had let them fail, then you know, everything would have gone to hell, and you know, we would have had the worst economy ever, blah, 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 blah. Okay, I understand some reasons for wanting to save them, but I feel like the fact that there's seemingly very little actual consequence, it's like after the bailouts, it's all back to business as usual. And that seems, it seems like there should have been more consequences. Or we should have learned from the whole big, too big to fail idea and said, okay, well, you know, from now on, there will be a cap on the size of certain types of businesses or a certain amount of assets that can be held in one place or whatever, or restrictions on indirect investments, that things that are, you know, like these credit default swaps and everything were like several levels of indirection away from the actual real live assets. You know, maybe there's only so far you can go down that road. Or you know, you put the cap on the size of businesses, you start out really high, and every year it goes down, and if your business is bigger than that, guess what? You have to split up. I don't know. Wouldn't we all be better off if instead of having big mega banks, we had lots of small local banks? In some ways, I think we would be. In other ways, I'm guessing it would be more expensive because you lose out on economies of scale. Don't know. Anyway, I understand the frustration. I don't know what the solution is, but I understand the frustration. And I understand that there are a lot of people, especially younger people and or people with less educational attainment, who are having a really tough time on the job market right now. And That's not a good place to be. But I'm not sure what the protests really get you in terms of how what do you actually expect to happen to make things better? You know, and I haven't heard that. And there's value in just expressing frustration, certainly. But what are you gonna? It's not like if it's just expressing frustration, then I guess that's the first step, and you have to express the frustration first before you figure out what you want to do with that frustration. But I'd like to hear the okay. Well, okay. So what do we do? It's something that has some semblance of realism, as opposed to, you know, close all the banks or crazy stuff, or, you know, make the minimum wage way, 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 way higher than it is, or whatever. You know, I don't know. I am not super sympathetic. But you know, I'll listen more, I guess. But I don't know. We'll see how these continue to develop. If they've peaked and now it's time for them to fizzle, well, then I'll never think about them again. If they continue to grow over the next month, maybe I'll pay attention more. I don't know. Okay, one final thought on the Al-Awlaki stuff. Just to be clear, this is an American citizen who was in Yemen doing a lot of propaganda stuff in favor of Al-Qaeda. And we killed him with a drone, I guess, last week or the week before. But the key here is that unlike... You know, we're killing people with drones all the time at this point as part of the war on terror, quote-unquote. Although Obama's not using that term anymore, but still. But this was an American citizen. And the question is there a need for a greater level of protection because he's an American citizen? I'll tell you, my initial reaction is no. But not in the direction you would think. It's because I think the non-American citizens should actually get a higher level of protection than they do. Not because I think that this particular guy needs less. But the disturbing stuff that's come out about this is apparently there's a panel that maintains a list of people that it's okay for the U.S. government to assassinate. And some of them are Americans. Most of them are not, but some of them are American citizens, and there's no oversight. There's this committee that does this, and they report the results to the president, and I guess the president signs off at some point, and then, you know, if we find any of these people in the crosshairs of our drones, we can, no questions asked, kill them. And that just leaves a really bad taste in my mouth. Like, because I've heard people, in the case of this particular guy, whose name I can't pronounce, I've heard people say that, at least publicly, there's not much evidence that he did anything ever more than propaganda videos and such. That he wasn't operationally in control of planning anything. He wasn't... he wasn't himself responsible for any aggressive acts against the United States. He was just a mouthpiece, and a particularly effective recruiting mouthpiece, I will say, because he was an American citizen. He was fluent in English. Part of what he did was he was trying to recruit more Westerners. And maybe he was effective at that, but apparently the evidence is kind of shaky, at least the public evidence. And do I really want my government to be able to, in secret, decide that certain people can just be killed, including American citizens. And apparently the logic that allows this to exist potentially would have allowed us to do the same thing if the guy was in Boston than if he was in Yemen. Now, I'm not sure that we would have, but the logic allows it. And this just seems an incredibly disturbing precedent. It's the same thing as the, you know, declaring people as non-combatants in terms of the Geneva Conventions in order to not have the Geneva Conventions apply to them when we throw them in Guantanamo, or whatever. It's the same kind of thing. It's, I realize they're bad guys in the world, and this guy may have been one of the bad guys, but the protections that we have in place, or at least used to have in place, one would think, that require due process and require evidence and require multiple people to sign off and require judicial review, all of these kind of protections are, yes, they cover the guilty and they may let some guilty people free, but the purpose of them is to keep us from doing these kinds of things. Once the power is out there, once you can do this to people who everybody sort of nods their head and says, yeah, this guy's guilty, then it's okay, you can do these kinds of things to people who a few folks think are probably guilty. And then it's like, they look iffy. It's one of these slippery slope things. And the problem with slippery slope arguments is that generally at some point along the slope, people do stop. You don't slide to the ridiculous cases. But still, it's the protections that are in place to protect the innocent are important, and they're important enough that they need to apply across the board. And yes, that means they apply to guilty people too. It means you make damn sure. And I don't want these kinds of decisions in the hands of secret panels of some sort. And I understand in a state of outright war and the heat of battle, blah, 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 things may happen. And at that point, the decision on whether or not to kill is very often in the hands of an individual soldier running, across a corner and seeing something in the blink of an eye and having to make a decision, and mistakes will happen. But these cases aren't that. Yeah, I would argue even in that case, we're probably more gung-ho than we should be. But this isn't that. These are cases where we know exactly what we're doing. We know the opportunity. There's not a heat of battle. There's potential opportunity to do other things. People have been captured in Yemen and brought to justice. People have also escaped in Yemen and blah, 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 blah. But, there are other possibilities other than just, drop a bomb on them or shoot a missile at them or shoot them. And I fundamentally, I'm not going to say that there's no situation ever where violence is not the right answer. But it should always be the last answer. It should always be what you do after you have exhausted all other possibilities. It shouldn't be, the default mode of action. And I certainly get the feeling in some of these cases that it's the default mode of action. And not only is it the default mode of action, but it is such in a way that has no appeal, no review, no anything. And that's a very dangerous amount of power to have in a limited number of people. I don't like the idea that the president can say, this particular American citizen has done bad things, therefore I am going to kill him. That just does not rub me the right way. It's very disturbing. And it's one of the disappointments in the Obama administration is that he has not wholeheartedly renounced this kind of stuff, and in fact he's embraced it. And, you know, I've always said there, you know, Obama always presented himself as a moderate, and, you know, the liberals who bitch that he wasn't the liberal messiah are idiots, because they didn't read his books and they didn't read what he said. And to some degree, I'm doing the same thing here. But this is an area where he gave speeches about the excess of presidential power. And so there was at least some hope he would rein it back a little. Whereas, in fact, he's been more aggressive about this kind of thing than George W. Bush ever was. Which is a little sad. Anyway, that's it for Curmudgeon's Corner this week. For the week of October 2nd through October 8th, which I'm shamefully recording on Saturday, October 8th. Oops. Anyway, that's our show. Thanks for listening. Tune in again next week. We'll probably be recording a show on October 9th, and I'll have Yvonne Bo with me again. So enjoy I hope you enjoyed your show. Tell your friends. Email me, owlsmay@owlsmay.com, with any questions, comments, thoughts. And have a good week, and listen again next time. Thank you. Goodbye.